Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Hello, everyone. This is Tamara Luna. I'm having some technical difficulties. I'm actually trying to rebroadcast a show from 2014, which is one of the first Heathen Perspective shows that we did before Ravenfire and Oaf were not able to do the show tonight, and kind of a last-minute thing for me. So I apologize in advance. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song real quick and figure out what happened and why the show's not playing. And hopefully when I come back, it will be ready to go. So everyone enjoy some music. And I am going to play, I don't even know what I'm going to play yet. Like I said, I'm having some technical difficulties. Let's see, let's play wherever it wants to stop. Don't know if it's going to stop. My computer just keeps going. Sorry. You all can laugh at me all you want. I'm going to play, it looks like, Jack Montgomery. Or no, it just went past that. I don't know. I'm getting a really bad delay on my laptop right now. Let's play wherever it stops. I'm going to play something random.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Yule, when the snow lay round about.
The last remains of Pompeii burned, they got about it, just returned to see the ashes covering the town. Empires burned and cities fell, while lovers kissed and said farewell, and laid their fragile bodies on the ground. I'm not scared to burn. To dust I will return again if you'll stay by my side. I'll lay down and I won't hide from fate. Growing colder, embers that had hotly smoldered settled in to lifeless dust below. The gadabout was still alive, but not another soul survived. So through the blackened streets he walked alone. But I'm not scared to burn. I will return again if you'll stay by my side. I'll lay down and I won't hide from fate. Thank you. will blow and we will curse the passing of the years. The time's eternal day by day, it's us who pass and blow away. Soon no one will remember we were here. But I'm not scared to burn. To death I will return again. If you'll stay by my side, I'll lay down and I won't hide from fate.
That was Josh Woodward and Ashes of Pompeii, and I believe I have this working now. I want to apologize to everyone again. Ravenfire and Oaf were not able to be on tonight, so we are doing a rebroadcast of one of our first Heathen Perspective shows from 2014. This is from when they spoke to Brian Smith of Heathens United Against Racism right after the Kansas City shooting, and they were speaking about racism within the heathen community. So this is a very important issue, and it's unfortunately still going on. So please, you know, pay attention and help out where you can. Let's call out racism and get rid of it. And here we go. And I will talk to you all again.
So basically, we come
on. Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Good evening, everybody. This is Raven Fired Off.
And this is Serenity Moonraven.
And this is Lydia.
And this is the Tree of Life Hour, brought to you by the Tree of Life Community Center here in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yay!
Okay, and for those of you all who are new to the Tree of Life Hour, the Tree of Life Hour is an outreach of the Tree of Life Community Center, which is we are a 501c3 pending organization that we are dedicated to creating sacred space here in the Louisville region for earth-based traditions, philosophies, pretty much you name it, we want to provide the space for it, religious-wise. So that being said, I guess we should get into what we're going to talk about tonight. So tonight is our Heathen Perspective episode, and tonight we've talked about this topic on the show once before, and we are going to be talking about racism in the heathen community and heathens that are fighting back against it, and we have... Sorry. Okay, and we have two guests with us tonight. First off, we have Ryan Smith from Heathens United Against Racism.
Hello.
And hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, this is Chopper.
Hey.
And we have Chopper also joining us from the Heathen Film Project. And we're going to talk all about kind of the response since the Kansas City shooting and a few general other things that are going on in the community. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Okay. So I guess real quick, we need to talk a little bit about the Kansas City shooting and kind of what happened there. Because basically there was a big dust up in the Heathen community regarding the Kansas City shootings. And for our listeners who don't know, what we're referring to is this gentleman, Fraser Glenn Cross Miller, I've heard his name several different ways, shot in Kansas City, shot up a Jewish community center and one in a synagogue during Passover this year.
Yeah.
And two people were killed. And when the news media got a hold of this and started digging into his past, they said that he was an Odinist, which then all of a sudden they lumped kind of all the Germanic religions together and basically said that Odinism is a white supremacist belief. And then once people start Googling Odin and this and that, you start seeing, you know, Ossature, heathenry, all this other stuff. And there was kind of a conflation there. And then there was a lot of people saying, wait a second, no, most heathens are not this way. He's not one of us. So I guess I'll let you gentlemen kind of address that.
Well, it was a knee-jerk reaction, and it happens every time there's a tragedy. I mean, you know, they wanted to blame Columbine on violent video games, and they find a connection that they can pursue. They're always looking for an excuse to explain things away. And, of course, they find out this gentleman is heathen. Naturally, that must be the reason why he's a jerk. That must be the reason why he took a loaded gun. You know, I mean, every time that there is an instance of violence, people want the easiest explanation to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Right. In this particular case, I agree that's definitely a big part of why they just latched on to the Odinist angle with it. And, of course, we can't forget that the media loves sensationalism. I mean, there's that expression I'm sure everybody's heard, if it leads, it leads. And just sort of, like, going off of that, I think where they would have gotten the Odinist connection from, because what's interesting is the only network that really ran with that line was CNN, which, you know, was, and I was in touch with Jason over at the Wild Hunt while all of this was going on, and from what he said, CNN didn't seem too interested in changing what their story was, because according to them, based on some very old information they were working from, they were right. Well, it turns out several other news organizations went digging. Time Magazine actually ran a little piece where they interviewed one of Cross's associates who swore up and down the man considered himself to be a good Christian. So, I mean, really, it's kind of unclear as to what exactly it was his spirituality was. I mean, you know, we've got some people
right.
saying that, some people saying that. It's like there's all kinds of different sources saying all kinds of things about it. But the Odinism is easy because there are some racist groups who use those symbols, are certain racist groups who use those trappings. So it's easy to assume, okay, we have this guy who's in this scene and has some of these things, therefore he must be an Odinist. Like, it's
well,
easy
Odinist
to make that
is assumption. A hot. Yeah, that's true. Odinist is a hot topic word anyway, because when you deal with the word Odinist specifically, you automatically have people thinking of prison gangs. And
mm-hmm.
so it's a very inflammatory word to use, even amongst the heathen community, because we do have an element that masquerade as proper heathens that are simply just racist hiding behind heathenism. And they call themselves Odinist in some circles. I actually had someone accuse me of being an Odinist. I'm like, oh, I worship more than just Odin. Why would I? I'm not monotheistic. And the explanation really boils down to I had to research what Odinist means in modern culture, and what it means is gang affiliation.
Well, one thing that doesn't help with that, to make it even more complicated, is the Odinist association is one that shows up in the United States and Canada. When you talk to people in, like, say, Mexico, Chile, or over in Europe, it has a completely different association over there, too. So it's, like, it's one of those ones that's really complicated and messy, unfortunately.
And real quick, gentlemen, I meant to do this a second ago. Can you all kind of tell our listeners a little bit more about yourselves? I kind of jumped right into the topic without having you guys tell our listeners kind of a little bit more about yourselves, because sorry, this is something that, you know, I'm pretty passionate about myself, so.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You want to go ahead, Chopper?
Yeah, sure. I'm Chopper White Wolf. I live in Central Texas. I'm a part of a pagan campgrounds called Spirit Haven Ranch. We have two gatherings a year, Beltane and Samhain. I've been the ranch manager out there for several years. And recently, through some of the different pagan and heathen chat groups I've been on, I've been personally affected by the level of racism involved in heathenry. And now that it has actually affected me directly, I kind of feel bad that I haven't been passionate about it in the past. But it's just like anything else that happens. Until it directly affects you, you just tend to ignore it. When I got called out as being a racist because I tend to lead towards the folkish side of heathenism, I got offended by that. So I started researching more what public opinion. I know what folkish heathenism is, and I know the difference between universalist and folkish and austere true. I've done my research. What I didn't know was what public opinion was about these things. When I found out that public opinion about folkish heathenism was pretty much, oh, they're just all racist, that's when I decided something has to be done. We've got a film project going right now, United Against Racism, a heathen film project. We'll be getting ready for production on that this next week to get started, and I'm very excited about that. That's actually how I found out about this broadcast this evening. Thank you, darling.
Oh, no problem. Ryan?
Well, in my case, it was actually also a case of being personally affected, although it wasn't so much one thing. Like, as far as some of my background, I've been a pagan of some kind or another for the past 17 years, a heathen for about 8 of that, and right now I am enjoying the fun that's called getting a master's degree in world history. By the way, anyone who is in a master's program will completely understand that the letters MA don't stand for Master of Arts, they stand for Masochist Anonymous.
It's funny you should mention that. My lady has two master's degrees.
Totally. It's something you choose to do to yourself. But anyway, and I also worked for like 3.5 years for the makers of annoying Facebook games like Farmville, and have done pagan networking and community organizing for years before that, and back when I was in college and since then. And the thing that kind of sort of started getting me in that direction was my degree is in medieval history, like specifically, you know, in the cultures of like the Viking Age and Scandinavia, Germany, Britain, all of that. And the thing that really kind of struck me is when we were reading the documents and going over all that stuff, because when you're doing medieval history, you read lots and lots and lots of really, really old books. The thing that struck me was nowhere was anybody talking about other people in a race-based kind of sense. Like, usually the first thing you'd see is somebody referring to somebody else as, oh, they're a Christian, or, oh, they would have used was Mohammedan if it's a Christian source, or Muslim if it's a Muslim source, or heathen or pagan. They kind of use those two interchangeably for referring to non-Christians. And whenever, like, you know, skin color came up, it was always kind of incidental, like something along the lines of, oh, and he has swarthy skin or something like that. Like, oh, he's a Christian and he's a Saracen and blah, 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 all this other stuff that was based on things.
Well,
and gods
were regional.
Exactly. It was a different thing. It was like, that was like sort of the thing that first started getting me in that direction. But the thing that really kind of got, like, two things sort of got me to really move. The first was that just continuously, like, just these small little, like, there was never any really big thing, but just all these, like, little moments of, because, I mean, and this is not to be a slight against anybody, but it would be fair to say in a lot of pagan circles that it is assumed that most heathens are racist of some kind or another unless they prove otherwise. And there's a lot of subtle ways that comes up as well as obvious ones. And it was after a lot of, like, years of the subtle stuff and then finally going overseas last summer and visiting with the people in Sweden, like heathens in Sweden, and getting the same reception from them before they really started to open up that I would get from more suspicious pagans in the U.S. was really just kind of like, wow, this is a huge problem. Occupying the Arab Spring also kind of helped as sort of a kick in the pants of if people sleeping in public spaces can shake the world to its boots, then why can't a small community like ours fix a big problem like this?
We're actually a pretty large community. The problem is we just spend so much time disagreeing amongst ourselves. The way I address the race issue, honestly, is I'm heathen and I happen to be white.
Yeah.
That white is not a culture. You know, you could be Greek or Spanish or a multitude of other different cultures and be white, brown, or yellow, or any combination thereof. Race in and of itself does not denote culture. And so to say I'm proud to be white is like saying I'm proud to wear shoes. It's not something to be proud of. It's a generic term.
Yeah. Like, there's actually this great book that I'd recommend reading called How the Irish Became White, which is a book that's all about how Irish immigrants in the United States, when they first came over, were considered to be subhuman and not white.
Who's the author of this book?
Historically, here in Kentucky.
Look it up real quick, but it's one that was recommended to me by a couple of my American history professors. One of whom is like somebody who actually did like specialize in like the history of slavery and indentured servitude and all the laws and systems around that. Let me get it up real quick. But it goes over the whole process of how like the whole concept of whiteness in the United States is a very elastic one. I mean, there's even great quotes from Benjamin Franklin where he's talking about, oh, those swarthy, these Germans and stuff like that. That's absolutely kind of hilarious.
Well, you know, you were talking about how the Irish became that the book, like our history here in the Louisville area here in Kentucky, we had a lot of immigrant fights between people who, you know, Scottish, Irish, English settlers who kind of settled this area, and then German immigrants coming in, and they're like, they're not really white. It's like, wait a second.
It's funny you should mention the German immigrants. The area where the campgrounds is that I manage is predominantly Czech and German, and there is a small community less than 10 miles apart from each other, one that is Czech and German, and they are devoutly Catholic, and the other that are more English, and they're predominantly Baptist. And there are no bars in the Baptist town. They drive 10 miles over to drink in the Catholic town.
Now, Brian, you said something about you spent some time in Europe and with the heathens and Scandinavian stuff. Now they don't have the same issues that we tend to do in America here with race. And is there a reason for that, or what is unique about, I'd say, America what is going on? Why is there this difference between these two different parts of the world?
And also a big part that I'd say is part of it also is philosophy, because when you get down to it, the basics of heathen philosophy, like the focus on your deeds are the sum of who you are. This focus on your worth is based on your merit as a person, and that's based on what you do. Is something you find pretty much everywhere. I mean, even you talk to on any continent, it's going to agree on that. And that's part of where they come at it from. They're like, well, if you believe in merit is the way you're supposed to judge people, then it doesn't make sense to judge people based on these other criteria. But it just doesn't. I mean, if you're going to say you can't practice this thing because you weren't born from the right bloodline or something, then you are saying there's something that comes before merit. Another part boils down to actually some fairly recent history. When you're talking, especially Norway and Sweden, they had the experience is probably the best word for it, of Norway and Denmark being occupied by the Nazis for 5 years during World War II. In fact, actually, the Norwegian resistance movement was one of the most active and effective in occupied Europe. And the Swedes on the other side of the border were, well, basically they were forced into neutrality under threat of German invasion, and a lot of Swedes participated in helping the Norwegian resistance fight back. So in a lot of ways, they have a very recent, up-close, and personal experience with ideology in its fullest flower. They know exactly what it does. So it's kind of no surprise that both organizations push back very hard against it. In fact, of the two, Fornsiders, the Swedish organization, and Asatru Fellesskapet Bifrost is the Norwegian one. Asatru Fellesskapet Bifrost is known for being even more aggressive of the two about it. But both are known for, like, saying, no, we absolutely have nothing to do with that. They make a point of educating people. And they're both also very active and cohesive organizations.
How does the refugee culture of the Black Dutch fit into this?
Actually, that's a really – I'm actually glad you brought that up. Because, like, Sweden and Norway are both known for having very liberal political asylum laws, they have a lot of refugees from all over the world. And one place that actually showed up is when I was talking with folks in Sweden, and they were saying about how they actually got some of their ideas about developing animistic practice from talking with South American refugees about ancient shamanism and shamanic practicing. So, yeah, they're totally like, oh, totally hang out with these people. I mean, there's definitely tensions within Swedish society over immigration and such, but there's tensions in every society over that kind of thing. I mean, that's something that's not necessarily unique to any one place or time. Whereas the United States, see, all over the place, a big part of the issue is in the U.S., it is partly a manifestation of the backlash against the civil rights movement in the 1960s.
I'm glad you brought up the civil rights movement, because it seems to me, and I'm not by any means college educated, but it seems to me that pretty much every issue of race stems from immigration. People think we were here first, we have a right to be here, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What makes you think you have the same rights that I do? I was here first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's definitely also tied up in it. And I think that it's from that whole backlash. Like, you can see this actually in the rhetoric of, like, some, like, not racist even groups as well as racist even ones, about how they're talking about, we're not like other pagans because we don't trace our ideas from the counterculture in the 1960s. And, of course, you'll see words like decadence and stuff thrown around usually in those kind of accounts. But in a lot of ways, I think it was significant in how American heathenry formed because, well, there was that broader backlash against the civil rights movement, and we see similar kind of language and arguments that come out of the racists who masquerade as heathens. And the fact that some of the first groups that they got together were founded in the 70s and the immediate aftermath of all of that sort of adds credence to that, I think. More recently, we can thank David Lane and Wotanism. But I think because of that.
Is that a whole other show?
Yeah, that could go on all day. But I think it's a large part because of those other social issues that are, of course, deeper issues in American society. But it's also the fact that in the U.S., there's more than one organization, and compared to some other organizations I've seen, they're not exactly the most cohesive or together. I mean, there's some great local and regional groups all over the U.S., but what options there are for national works for heathens are kind of thin on the ground and limited in what they offer and how well they do
it. I was actually speaking with our host earlier off the air about that very topic, about how the biggest problem that we face as heathens in America is we don't have a united front. We're too busy squabbling amongst ourselves and fellow pagans to be able to present a united front. The specific issue of racism and heathenry, and if you don't mind me taking a minute to address this, is folkish heathenism. And the problem I have with the way folkish heathenism is presented by the vocal minority is that, mm-hmm. Oh, well, I have a right to be heathen and you don't based on my skin color. But the hubris in thinking that only a certain skin tone has Nordic ancestry is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been 1,200 centuries since the beginning of the Viking era. There's been a lot of international travel. There's been a lot of marriages across continents. There's no way anybody could possibly look at me with a straight face and convince me that only people with a certain pigment have Norse ancestry. Mm-hmm. So even if you are a folkish heathen, you have no religious right, no moral mandate to be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and I think that's where the distortion comes in. I mean, like, as an example, well, like what you were just saying, Chopper, about the whole, like, you know, people traveling and cultures mingling, which, by the way, is a thing that's happened throughout human history. Like, this whole concept of little islands of isolated human cultures in a sea of wilderness is completely inaccurate, and probably never existed. But, like, one particular example that I love is this study that was done that shows something like 2% of all people in across Asia, like we're talking from, like, Russia all the way to China, are somehow related to Genghis Khan.
Oh, yeah.
One guy is somehow related to 2% of several hundred million people. One person.
Well, there was a very good reason for that. He raped a lot of people.
Well, there's that. Well, that must take the Viking Age, where they proceeded to do that to all of Europe for about 200 years.
Well, and people call America the melting pot of the world, but that's actually very inaccurate. Central Europe was the melting pot of the world. That's mm-hmm. where trade from all corners of the world met and did business. It was the hub of business for centuries.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's, like, this one great archaeological find that is dated to around, like, the 5th century in northern Sweden from what is definitely a Scandinavian culture grave that has a golden Buddha dated to about the 5th century from the Indus Valley.
Oh, wow.
Even if the person who possessed it didn't directly go all the way to India, the fact that they had trade connections that went that far says a lot. I mean, and this is like, you know, as the Roman Empire is collapsing and civilization is supposedly entering a dark age. I mean, think about that.
The dark age, yeah. Don't say that in front of my lady. She hates that pejorative.
Yeah. Historians don't even use it anymore, so.
And something, you know, you were talking a minute about, like, the national orgs and stuff. I know there's a couple, there's, like, one group that's kind of, basically, they're just like, oh, we don't care what our members believe in private as long as they don't show up to our events. And can you all kind of address that a little bit?
Well, I know in the Austin area, there's a gentleman who I will not name who is the head of a rather large heathen circle. He runs a kindred down here. And he honestly is not a person that I would invite to dinner or into my home. And it's not because he is innately racist. It's not because he is racist hiding behind a heathenism shield. It's just the fact that he is racist and he happens to be a heathen. I'm not calling him out by name because he's not spouting religion for the reason why he's a bigot and a racist. He's from the South. It's kind of ingrained in him. I got better. He didn't. But in situations like that, in organizations like that, that's really just turning a blind eye, and that's just bad leadership and bad stewardship.
Mm-hmm. Like I said before, one big element in what ensures, like, what keeps, particularly when you're talking Norway, Sweden, Germany, and Iceland, and the heathen communities there, relatively free of this stuff and this stuff shoved to the quiet fringe, is they are very, very big about calling this stuff out when they find it. Asatru Feleska, that Bifrost, even has people that actively look for that kind of stuff when it shows up. And so that's part of how they've kept it out, is because when it does show up, even if they're not doing it at events or whatever, they say, excuse me, you just did what? Okay, so we have verified you just did what. You are aware this is against the group's bylaws and principles and stuff, so that means you're out. And we don't know you anymore. Like, they deal with it very decisively. And
well, I've always called it out on a personal level. I've never really made a public stand against it. And now that I'm starting to take on a more of a leadership role in the community, I feel like I'm honor bound to call out people who are disparaging my faith and my tradition and my ancestry by saying, oh, it's okay to be a jerk because my religion says so. To me, there is no difference in extremist from one religion to another, and extremist is an extremist, and they do not represent the whole of the body.
Exactly. And we need to be clear on that. And, like, organizations not calling out or organizations saying, oh, it's not our problem or we're not dealing with it. I'm just going to have to quote Desmond Tutu on this. Those who remain neutral in questions of injustice side with the oppressor. That's all there is to it. If you're going to say nothing about it, then you are effectively saying to them, hey, we will totally give you aid and shelter and cover. We will not say boo as long as you don't drop that stuff on our front porch. I mean, that's exactly what the groups that push this stuff want. They want a safe platform that they can quietly build their networks from.
Well, the only thing necessary for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. I mean, it's an age-old quote, and it's very true. The problem that I face on a daily basis is having to downplay the public opinion that because I'm heathen, I'm racist. You were very correct on that. No matter where I go, people find out I'm heathen, they automatically assume, oh, he's white and he's heathen, he must be a white supremacist. No, that is not the case. In fact, it's very far from it. But there's really not an easy platform to reach the people that need to hear this, because the people who really need to hear this aren't going to be amicable towards listening to a pagan broadcast. That's why I thought, we'll make a YouTube video, we'll flood the internet with it, we'll make it a continuing education program so we can put out clips every 6 months or so on different topics and present the public with legitimate heathen resources, not some of the tripe that you read out there written by any Joe Blow folkish who wants to promote his agenda by subtle means, saying, oh, well, we're folkish, we're not racist.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why me and some other folks got together and started Heathens United Against Racism in the first place, was so that we could have, like, more than anything else, a networking space that it could be, well, I mean, you can't 100% guarantee anything on the internet. I mean, there's that old quip, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. But assuming that none of our members are canines in secret, it provides a safe space for people who are most likely not, like, and I'm saying like 90% likely not to be racist or sympathetic to that, and it gives space for people to talk and network and meet other people. And also to really discuss what it is that's going on with that. Because I think we need to, like, along with calling this stuff out, we really need to discuss why is this a problem? What is the stuff that makes it a problem so that we really know how to address it and make it and just resolve it permanently?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is not anything I'm doing. It's the fact that I haven't been speaking out against what's being done in the name of my religion.
Mm-hmm. And that's something, like, we're all guilty of at some point or another. And it's time we just start doing something. I mean, like, some people, I think it's partially fear of alienating people who they've come to see as friends or close associates. Like, well, do you really want to be friends with somebody who's dragging down something that you're saying is the most important thing in your life?
Well, I have been blessed with being able to interact with a dozen or so people since pulling together this film project, and talk them down from the edge of going the wrong way. There's been several people who have contacted me privately and on the list about what exactly is the difference between folkish and universalist heathenism. What exactly is the difference between heathenism and Odinist and Ossetru? And they're all just varying degrees of the same practice. And what made me happy was knowing that I could actually inform somebody and give them some good resources so that they were able to look and go, I was just describing my own personal bigotry to what I was reading instead of actually understanding the source material.
And I agree, like, that's part of it, is we have to get the information out. Like, I'm just more saying, like, you know, the distinction between people who are kind of on the edge and don't know any better, those are people that we need to talk to. But the people who are actively promoting this stuff and know what it is,
yeah.
Granted, and this is an argument that I did get into with somebody else before, George Wallace, you know, the guy who stood in the schoolhouse door famously saying segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever, did decades after the civil rights movement was over repent. But we can't exactly, I don't think it's fair to hold out that kind of hope that someday some of these people who are actively promoting this stuff and know what it is might see the light and stop.
There really is, you're absolutely correct. There really is no way to stop people who are decided in their faith and their path that this is the correct thing. There's no way to change their minds. What we can do, the only thing we can do, and we're responsible to do so, is to educate. The only way to get past hatred, racism, and bigotry is to educate. And if we educate the masses, and if we educate the people who are fledglings in the heathen path, what our worship is, what our traditions are, and what they really mean, then we can further separate ourselves from these radical elements. So, yeah, the radical elements will still exist, but we can isolate them to the point where the general public knows that's not us. They do not speak for our values nor to our beliefs.
Exactly.
And real quick, we need to take a quick station break. So I'm going to play a song by Gwydion Pentliver, We Won't Wait. And then we will be right back here on the Tree of Life Hour on Pagans Tonight.
We won't wait any longer. We are stronger. We have trusted no man's promise, we have kept to just ourselves. We have suffered from the lies in all the books upon your shelves. And our patience and endurance through the burning times and now have given us the strength to keep our vow. We won't wait any longer, we are stronger. Have grazed away the heather and have raised the sacred grove. You have driven native peoples from the places that they love. Though your greed has been unbounded, you have felt the pangs of shame every time you trod upon the mother's name. We won't wait any longer. We are stronger. Had destroyed the memory of the ancient way. Still the people light the pale fire every year on Solstice Day. And on Beltane Eve and Samhain, you can find us on the hill, invoking once again the triple will. We won't wait any longer. We are stronger. But dispersed among the nations of the world, we linger on. Now the time has come to take the sacred cauldron of rebirth and fulfill our ancient pledges to the earth. We won't wait any longer. We are stronger. We are
Be more than an incredible ritualist. Be an effective leader for your community. My book, Bridging the Gap, Working Within the Dynamics of Pagan Groups and Society, is geared towards filling the common gaps in our community by using techniques as tools to assess, understand, and work with the changing dynamics of any group or coven by using common counseling techniques. The book discusses tools around anger management, assessment, boundaries, behavior shaping, restorative justice, conflict resolution, maintaining a healthy group mind, and mentoring. As paganism evolves, it is becoming clearer that being an incredible ritualist is not all that is needed to be a competent leader or member of our pagan community. It is necessary for us pagans to have tools and skills in dealing with a myriad of issues that can plague any group or society. Pick up your copy of Bridging the Gap by Crystal Blanton today at your local metaphysical shop or order through www.crystalblanton.com, Amazon, or the Emanian Press website.
Here on Pagans Tonight. And tonight, for those of you all who are just joining us, we are talking about fighting racism in the heathen community, and our guests are Ryan Smith and Chopper White Wolf. And we had a question in chat. This actually happened right before the break, but I'm going to wait till after the break to happen because I have a feeling both of you gentlemen have some interesting takes on this one. And it was Harrison Hall. One of the guests talked about the difference between folkism and actual folkism. Where does one philosophy start and the other begin? What is a hard line where things transition into something bigoted? So I kind of wanted to kind of hit on that real quick.
Well, for me, the difference in where the line blurs is really simple. Being a folkish heathen is simply following an ancestral tradition. Where it blurs into racism is where you start imposing your beliefs on others' practices and telling them they don't have a right to practice as they see fit because it infringes upon your ideals of how it should be done.
That's a good line. I mean, personally, I don't identify as folkish or universalist, mostly because from what I've seen, I've heard so many different definitions for both of them that I think if anyone's going to be drawing any lines in the heathen community, the only one that would make sense would be the racist and everybody else. I think that's also definitely where the line is between I'm doing this because it's ancestral practice versus this is my ancestral practice, get off my porch.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And honestly, I've had too many people tell me, oh, it's okay for the Native Americans. Why isn't it okay for us? You know, I have not met a single Native American practitioner that was upset that someone else was following a Native American path. Unless you actually try to walk into one of their rituals, they're not going to care what your personal spiritual path is. If you want to be part of their grove or their kindred or their coven, then that's when you have to meet the rules of whatever that particular circle has. But outside of that, they don't care. That's the difference.
Yeah, like a big misconception with this whole thing about, well, Native Americans do that is they always point to the whole blood quotient system. And there's two problems with them. The first problem is there is no consistent blood quotient set out right now, because that's something that's kind of a myth. If you have this much Native American blood, therefore you count as a member of a tribe. It's like, well, no, each tribe has its own very specific rule, which, by the way, is a big difference between what to, well, you're not white, so get out.
Well, that's the difference between nationality and religion, though.
Exactly. But when, like, for example, one tribe, which is when I studied a bit in college, the Eastern Shawnee, were previously from Kentucky, were relocated after the War of 1812 involuntarily to Oklahoma. When they were forced to write a tribal constitution, and by the way, the constitutions that lay out these blood quotients were basically the BIA came, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which a lot of tribes have heard refer to as bully Indians around, came in and said, you all have to come up with specific rules, including a blood quotient, so that we can identify you, track you, and keep you under control. If you don't, then we're just going to dissolve you as a tribal entity. I mean, that's basically how it got set up. So it was set up for cultural marginalization. This wasn't about preservation.
Well, and you've got, like, I know the Western Band of Cherokee, like, their chief, I think, is I think he's only, like, 132nd. Because, you know, because all the tribes have a blood quotient, but yet the Eastern Band, like, if he was a member, he couldn't be a member of the tribe if he was Eastern Band, but because he's Western Band, he is a member of the tribe. And that goes to show that thing where each tribe sets their own rules about who is a member of their tribe and who isn't.
That's actually a great segue into this particular part of the show, because each different kindred sets the standard for participation in their kindred. That has no bearing whatsoever on the greater community at large. That's just what each particular kindred ascribes to participation. So as far as people who are exclusionary based on bloodlines, first of all, I doubt half of them have actually had their genealogy done in depth. They're just basing it on the fact that they're white. And secondly, whatever their particular kindred practices are theirs and theirs alone. The racist issue comes up when they start becoming vocal about others and the way that others practice.
Well, and also when those same groups put out information advocating for racist heathenry, which is another part of the problem, is kind of like you said, basically getting vocal, and not just like when they get vocal and get into other spaces, but just when putting out bad information, because God knows that for every good heathen site, there's at least five that should be deleted, just based on
we are pretty much the silent majority. The big problem with racism and heathenry in America actually started in the prison system. And it started benign enough, but as people started getting paroled and as more young people started cycling through the prison system, they realized, hey, this is a great way for us to organize within the prison system under the umbrella of religious freedom. And it had nothing to do with heathenry.
That's actually one thing that's a big misconception about the Odinist prison gangs, is people assume that a lot of them are white power groups, whereas it would be more accurate they use religion and white power as a cover for a criminal organization. I mean,
and they can get away with wearing religious symbols, whereas gang signs would not be allowed.
Exactly. It goes into larger issues in the prison system, that prison guards actively encourage this kind of race-based division because it makes it easier to keep the inmates in check. I mean,
well, darling, don't you work in the prison system?
No. I really can't really talk about my job on air.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What I do.
I'm not saying everybody's out being some kind of evil mustache twirling. I'm just saying,
Yeah.
That I've heard from, like, chaplains, though, and whatnot, especially chaplains who work in other states, they're saying stuff like, their big problem for some of the heathen groups, their big problem is they want to minister to, you know, the normal heathens. The problem is that sometimes they have these white supremacists kind of filter in and try to take over. Like,
I've got a good friend of mine in the prison system in East Texas. He's been working in the prison system for the last 20 years or so. And he's just a guard, and he's an atheist, actually. But the one thing that he told me he found very interesting is that there are a group of prisoners in every prison he's worked at that will go to every single religious service offered just to have something to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because there's a lot of profound boredom in the system, from what I understand.
Yeah, like one thing I've heard that motivation for a lot of people behind bars converting to either like Judaism or Islam, for example, is both require that you get halal and kosher food, which is higher quality than what they're giving in the prison cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, I know this is the answer and question portion, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I do have to ask. We firmly know what the problem is, but what are the solutions? What's the first step as conscientious heathens that we should take?
Well, I'm thinking the first thing would be, along with discussing the problem, is we are also giving specific things to watch out for. Because, I mean, theory and where it all comes from is good, but we also need to be able to say, well, here's specific things that if you see this, hear this, whatever, you're probably talking to somebody who you should at least be taking a closer look at. Big one I've found, and actually there's a great example of this, of a guy who's actually not even a heathen, is that they start bringing up stuff that could be best described as scientific racism. What this is and in like the general conception that society has of these kind of racist groups, they usually picture like skinheads or Ku Klux Klan marching down the street, you know, people talking about white race and all that stuff. That's not the one that when you're talking like the more subtle ones who play things like the scientific racism card use. What they try to argue is using usually incorrect, improperly quoted, dated information to prove that certain ethnic groups have inherent qualities and therefore are superior, inferior, must be kept separate from each other, blah, blah, blah. And then they go from there to say that culture is a biological thing that has to be preserved.
Very interesting you should bring that up. I was speaking with someone earlier today about the Human Genome Project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, just a lot of these people, and I do want to kind of address how these guys kind of subtly try to put lipstick on the pig of racism mm-hmm. and be subtle about it. But the one thing that, like, when they actually went in and did the Human Genome Project, there's not a human gene for race. There are certain biological markers that show that someone's ancestors went to this area and evolved into this environment in this specific area. And it's all because of the biology and the environment in that area and the mutations trying to survive in that area. And it's not specifically race that you know, it's like so many people don't understand. If you would just read normal scientific literature, you would understand that your concepts of race are out there.
Yeah, exactly.
No scientists would agree with you. So I guess the one thing I guess we should talk about is kind of how they're putting lipstick on a pig.
I've actually got one example, and this one's actually pretty striking because he's not even a heathen, but he gives a perfect case study of how these guys do it, named Kevin McDonald. He was previously, until a couple of years ago, a psychology professor at California State University, Long Beach, which, you know, well-established, respected school. What the university officials didn't know is he was also a member of the American Third Position Party, which is now known as the American Freedom Party, which basically can best summed up as a neo-fascist white nationalist party. Like, if you look up their stuff, they're completely, like, out in front about it. The thing that got him relieved of teaching classes indefinitely, he wasn't fired, but that's because the only way you can fire a tenured professor is if you find a dead body under their desk. But he was relieved of teaching indefinitely because he started including some of the stuff on his personal blogs into his arguments, specific in evolutionary psychology. The thing that really got him booted was when he argued that, this one's great, Judaism is a perfect example of group identity survival and propagation. And then just sort of went from there into stuff that fits better in the protocols of the Elders of Zion and other obviously anti-Judaic stuff like that. And he was like teaching for years and like just sort of like quietly working the stuff in until finally he just got too obvious to ignore, and then they were like, yeah, you don't get to teach anymore. Goodbye. And, you know, on like the infiltration point, which has been raised a few times before, there's actually an even more hair-raising one from just this last year, actually, where there was an individual who was working in, let me find his name here, an individual named John Stortstrom, who was previously a U.S. Army research engineer who was working in a biological and chemical weapons lab. He was discharged last year when the Army unearthed his close ties to white nationalist groups like Youth for Western Civilization and American Renaissance. I mean, this is a guy who's advocating a philosophy that calls for genocide and segregation, working in a lab for making weapons of mass destruction. I mean,
what could possibly go wrong?
Seriously.
So, like, what sort of... One thing I did want to kind of bring forward is what sort of language and what sort of things are these white supremacists kind of saying that are I'm not talking about the ones who are like what I'm used to in Kentucky with out and out racist and redneck Klansmen, where they say it and it's like, you know, they're dropping the N bomb every other word and that type of thing. It's like, okay, you know, at least I know your balls out. You're not.
Well, the subtle hints are pretty evident when you know what to look for. When you're talking to someone that you randomly meet at a cocktail hour that happens to be wearing a Molnar, which I don't wear a Molnar, actually, I wear Tiwaz, they drop words like, are you a true heathen? I'm a traditionalist. That right there is a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Other ones they'll also talk about is, like, if you get into more conversation, like, they might say things about, you know, isn't it better when, you know, people just stick with people who are like them? They make a very big deal about, oh, it's about going back to your ancestors. But one thing that also sticks out, though, that's consistent with all of them, and this is a concept that shows up in social justice work called intersectionality, is frequently if you have somebody who's a racist to them, they probably have other forms of bigotry floating around in their headspace. In the particular case of, like, white nationalism stuff, their justification for hating, like, gay people and trans people is that anyone who's not making more white babies is a race traitor.
That's also prevalent in some Christian extremists.
Which is,
wow.
There is quite a bit of overlap between the two.
And honestly, I really don't see the difference between the two, and I know that may sound like sacrilege, but honestly, the extremists, the white supremacists in the Christian faith, to me, are just the same as the extremists and white supremacists in heathenry, because they're using religion as a stick to beat people with.
Seriously, like, they're just the same as, like, the crazy clerics in, like, Saudi Arabia who arrest women for driving. I mean,
yeah,
that, those people do not represent all of Islam, but all of Islam gets tarred by that brush. It's the same thing with us. And also in particular, they'll bring up certain authors. The ones to look out for are Julius Evola, who was Italian. He's the biggest one. He's the big one. If somebody mentions Julius Evola positively, that's kind of the biggest reddest flag you can get. And incidentally, if anyone tries to say he's not a fascist, okay, technically you are right. He did leave the Italian Fascist Party because he thought they were too soft and joined the Waffen-SS. That's like saying I don't use gas because nukes work better. I mean, come on. But he's a big one. Alain de Benlist, and he calls his stuff Nouvelle Droite, which means new right, is another big one. There's also Troy Southgate. He's a newer one. He calls his stuff national anarchism, although I've never met an anarchist who considers him or his crew to be anarchists. With, you know, again, we're talking, you know, infiltration, copy other people's stuff. It's their shtick. On Miguel
After the broadcast, we need to get together on resources. One thing I'm currently compiling along with my lady is a list of legitimate resources and a list of red flag resources that we can put out along with our film project to offer people things that, yes, by all means, read this, but understand that this is some of the red flag material. You need to be aware of what's out there and what's being spouted in the name of our religion.
Yeah, I've been working with some other web admins to get a similar list together of, like, Facebook pages that promote, I'm distinguishing between, like, soft and hard racism of the ones that do the, apple pie words.
This
metagenetics, we've been hearing that a lot here in Kentucky because we have a group in Eastern Kentucky who likes to think they speak for the entire state. But if you look at their Twitter handle, they're totally 1488. You know, when you're friends with the American Nazi Party, yeah.
Wow.
Or when you're Nazi Party. But the one thing they love throwing around was metagenetics. Oh my gosh, to me metagenetics is like one of the biggest red flag words out there. Or at least that's what I'm hearing here in Kentucky. And, you know, these groups are so regional that sometimes what's working in one region might not work in another. But I think hearing, you know, understanding the stuff that they're throwing around and the people that they're quoting can kind of help ordinary pagans to say, wait a second, you should not be here.
You can't arm yourself against this type of ignorance unless you know what it is that they're spouting.
Exactly.
The problem with the concept of metagenetics is, just like I said earlier, the genericness of whiteness. There really is no value in being proud of this color of your skin. It has no bearing whatsoever on your culture or your ancestry. I actually have Hispanic, Asian, and African in my family line. I've got cousins, first and second cousins, that are of different skin tone than I am, but they're still my blood relatives, and they still have just as much heathen in them as I do.
Right.
Ryan, you were going to say something about metagenetics. I thought you were getting ready to say something about metagenetics or something.
Well, actually, I've also heard metagenetics as well. And what's actually kind of funny is when you read the paper where this first came from, and you can Google it and find it, it's floating all over the internet. The first thing that's interesting is, of all the scientific sources quoted, first off, none of them are properly cited, so you can't actually look up what this guy's quoting.
Are any of these in peer-reviewed articles?
No, I don't know, actually, because all he gives are the names of the scientists and vague reference to the work they've done. He doesn't even cite what articles they're pulling it from. Like, he could be misquoting for all I know. But that's the first thing, that's the problem. The second thing is none of the people he's quoting are actually geneticists. and the third one, and this is one that I kind of got a little heat from some blogger about for a podcast I did at Pantheon, is the question of language. And the reason I bring that up is within academia today, we're talking anthropology, history, like literature, linguistics, everybody. What's considered to be like the number one identifier of culture and carrier of culture is language. And that's like something that's a major tracker that's used like across, and this is like all over the world, is like academic consensus. So if, as metagenetics and Julius Evola and radical traditionalists and white nationalists argue, culture is genetic, then I should be capable of spitting out Old Scots Gaelic, Modern Scots Gaelic, Old English, Middle French, Old Norse, Old Swedish, and Norwegian right now at the drop of a hat without having to open a book on any of the above. Obviously,
That's a very interesting take. I love that.
Obviously, I am not a polylinguist, so there's a problem with this. And, you know, if that argument of culture is genetic was true, then all of us would be like coming out of the womb with three or four languages in our head already.
Well, genetic superiority really only Well, genetic superiority really comes down, only actually makes itself evident if you're looking at regional adaptation. If you take someone born at the equator and stick them up with an Inuit tribe, they are not genetically predisposed to survive in that environment because their ancestors haven't lived there for thousands of years to develop the mutations necessary. So, yes, exactly. Genetically, they are inferior in that environment. If you take an Inuit and stick them at the equator, the same is true. But as far as whether one person is superior to another in intellect based on what region their ancestors are from is ludicrous.
Yeah, there's nothing to support that. I mean, like you said, like it's the same thing as if you took a horse and dropped it in the desert. The horse is going to die. Why? Because the horse is not adapted to live in the desert. Done. Like, the whole logic behind it ignores a lot of, like, the stuff that's actually in genetics. Like, for example, we find mutations in local populations where populations that are, like, the generation after a population that experienced famine has more efficient metabolisms. Why? Because their parents had to go without food for a while, or at least with very minimal food. Like, stuff like that.
And another thing I kind of wanted to address is some of the ways that they're infiltrating, because I know they're coming because they've got publishers and they're kind of sneaking things in through publishers, but they're also kind of sneaking things in through music shows and concerts and stuff. And I was wondering if either one of you could kind of address that briefly. Because I know happened out on the West Coast earlier this year. Or it might have been last year.
Oh, yeah. Stellina Tora. So the deal with that is it goes to another concept that's worth looking up that they call metaculture and metapolitics. To give the short version, metapolitics is the idea of advancing political ideas through non-political means and non-political venues. So, like, for
like rock the vote.
Exactly. However, it's a concept that, as far as I can tell, specifically was developed by, like, these people that we're talking about. And they consciously cultivate it, and they consciously go for it, of where, I mean, Death in June is an excellent example. I mean, that's a band that, like, their public thing is they say, oh, we're just, like, being edgy, we're being controversial, we're being artists. It's like, yes, and you're singing songs about the SS and concentration camps, and you have the Totenkopf on your band logo. But, like, Estella Natura is an especially good example because the majority of the bands there were probably mostly just okay, like folk metal, like folk whatever kind of acts who are out there because, hey, it's a show, this is a niche scene, we need gigs. But there were quite a few bands, Blood Axis being, like, the most prominent example, who most definitely fit into the category of racist music. And that's kind of the thing they go with, is if you have this whole thing about looks okay, then it's easier to get people who are showing up and peddling the soft racist stuff because it'll be like, hey, this stuff is at this show. I guess it must be relevant, kind of, maybe, somehow. Basically they're trying to get in the side door because they know the front door of saying what their politics are is a non-starter. Like, they know the vast majority of people, if you actually tell them, what I want is a dictatorship enforced by a vicious social Darwinian ethos where might makes right and those I deem weak deserve to be crushed underfoot. Like, I'm sorry, most people aren't going to get on board with that. That's why they don't do it that way.
Well, historically speaking, every nation in the world was founded by the people who were strong enough to take it from someone else and keep it. We're past that point for most of the civilized world. There are still some pockets of the world that are still fighting amongst themselves, especially in the Middle East. And it really is not about race. It's about dominance over a specific geographical region.
Or resources.
And it's all about who can keep the resources and who can take the resources. And we should be in the 21st century beyond that, to the point where we are all just fellow occupants of the same planet. What irritates me about the concept of metagenetics and scientific racism is very plain and simple. I don't care what color your skin is or the slant of your eyes or the slope of your brow. All I care about is how you treat me and how you treat your fellow man.
Exactly. I mean, we are living in a world that is even more connected than it ever has been at any point in human history.
We have instant worldwide communication.
Yeah, I mean, for crying out loud, we are having this discussion over the first media, the first form of mass media in human history that was genuinely interactive. I mean, can you talk back to the TV or the radio? No. Can you chat with people on a podcast or on a blog? Absolutely. I mean, that's something that's new, and that's something bringing people together all over the world. And if the thing that's defining our community is, like, completely irrational, knee-jerk prejudice, then our community is not going to survive.
Well, the two things that need to happen, and it's something that I think you and I are definitely of a mind in, is, first of all, we have to be united. We have to stand together. We have to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder, brother and sister. This is what we believe, and this is what we will tolerate, and this is what we will not tolerate. And the second portion of that is to educate not only our own community members who may be using terminology they don't know is sly lipstick on the pig terminology that they've just heard from other people that they think are legitimate resources in the community. We have to educate not only our own community members, but we have to educate the community at large. We have to educate the people at large that this is the difference between heathenry and racism.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we locally actually were able to get one group that doesn't show up to Pagan Pride Day events because a bunch of the heathen population locally kind of said, look, you should not be letting these guys come back because, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're doing this, doing that. You know, we'll come in and we're going to set up and we'll be, you know, you want us as the face of Ossetra. You don't want those guys because those guys are very subtle racists when they're around pagans. But when you look at their stuff, they're right out there, you know.
So did you have any clues before that conversation, or had you just kind of had a gut feeling about them?
No, I didn't have any clues. I mean, because when I was talking to them, and this was this was several years ago, and I wasn't heathen then, but I was really interested in it, and so I started talking to these guys, and they were talking about culture and this and that, and started suddenly asking me about my ancestors. Well, you know, I'm dealing with German, English, Cherokee, a little bit of Irish, and some Jewish all thrown in there. Well, when I talked about, you know, my grandfather, his family is Jewish. He converted to Catholicism and married my grandmother.
Okay.
Which, back in the 1930s,
that was unheard of.
Yeah.
That was very unheard of for someone who was born Jewish, raised this way, converted to get married. You know, converted to Christianity to marry a woman.
Well, Judaism is passed down through matriarchal lines, so it would make more sense for him to.
But then they didn't want to have anything to do with me after that. It's like, you know, wait a second, you know, okay, so technically I'm only, you know, I don't understand why you all have an issue with this. You know, I didn't really realize, like, I didn't really realize what was going on because I didn't understand what I was seeing at the time.
He was checking your credentials.
Yeah, well, and not only that, but this was like my first actual exposure to a heathen group, because here in Louisville, at the time, the heathen community was so underground, where you had your racist heathens on one side, and then you have your non-racist heathens on the other side, and everybody was kind of hiding out because they didn't want to have to worry about the crossover.
Well, being non-Christian in American society today is still kind of touch and go. There are pockets that are more accepting, like the Austin area in Texas is very open and very friendly, but you still have some people that they find out you're not a Christian, they don't care what you are. You're not a Christian. You're going to burn in hell, and we have to save your soul. So the reason the heathen movement was so underground in America, and the reason why I think the racists got a foothold, was because of the fact that good
honest, hardworking Americans that happened to be heathen just didn't talk about it.
And right, mm-hmm. No, and I happen to agree there. But you know, when that happened, and they were at pagan at our pagan Pride Day for like 2 years in a row, and then a friend of mine introduced me to Rick, and then Rick Gardner, and then we had a conversation with Rick, and Rick was kind of like, well, hey, wait a second, I think I can do a booth at Pagan Pride Day, and you know, we'll kind of do our own little thing.
He's not related to Gerald Gardner, is he?
No. No.
Small world, if you will.
It was kind of like we'll do our own thing. And, you know, he used to be a trove steward and do other stuff, and he was out of town for a long time. So, but the thing about it was just like, you know, my whole thing with that was at that point in time, that was like my first big exposure to Officer and Heathenry was this group. And it wasn't like they were at a white pride rally or a music festival or anything. They were at a pagan pride day. And they didn't say anything about racism. They didn't, you know, everything was very subtle. They were talking about metagenetics and metapolitics and the whole meta thing with them. And it's kind of why I'm very passionate about it, because it's like I almost, you know, I was kind of prejudiced against, but yet almost was listening to them and was kind of almost half thinking they were legitimate. I hadn't had a chance to actually sit down and read or anything like that, but, you know, it kind of soured me at that point in time. It wasn't until I talked to Rick and then met some guys from White Oak down in Nashville and met Ligaria and Ransom and all them. It's like, hey, wait a second. These guys are idiots. These people are normal.
Well, and that's the hook. That's the hook of racist heathenry. Is it is very empowering. It makes you feel special. It makes you feel important. And
exactly.
that's what appeals to the younger crowd that is on the fringe between whatever religious philosophy they were raised as, or even if they were raised as heathen, because it makes them feel like they have some type of power over their fellow man because they belong to a special group that only a few can belong to, when in reality it's not anything other than just simply what the gods have called you to do. If you feel called to follow a specific path, or if you feel called from different portions of different paths. I mean, I hate the term traditional. There is really no traditional non-Christian faith on the planet from an unbroken lineage. Every religion on the planet has been broken at some point in time and been reconstructed. So what we're practicing today is modern heathenism. It's just that. It's modern heathenism. It doesn't. You can't look at religion without taking into account the historical context of the time it was practiced.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing about how they get people, is exactly the whole issue of they come up, they give the soft line, and a lot of what I think gets people to like slowly go all the way, if the first thing they get is the soft candy-coated line, is sooner or later just running into that whole kind of sunk cost mentality of, well, these are the only people I know, these are the only guys I've got. I mean, at that point, it's sort of like it's like a flipping of the switch. If at first it's like, hey, look, we're going to totally bring you into this cool, special, like, super secret club kind of thing. But then once you're in, you start finding out that it's kind of hard to get out. And, oh, by the way, you've lost contact with a lot of other people who could help you get out along the way.
When I was still doing my religious and historical research to determine what path I was going to take, I actually became agnostic before I started following a heathen path. And I am ancestrally a heathen, but my dad was a Southern Baptist preacher. And what I figured out very early on as a child was that people raised in a faith are just kind of blasé about the faith. It's the converts that are the zealots.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get somebody new to a faith and they become really excited about it, they tend to be the ones that jump to the forefront and preach the loudest. When you have these young people, especially young white males, that get involved in heathenry, they are all zealous about this new thing that they just found, and they want to tell everybody about this new thing that is just so awesome, and they want the world to know how cool they are because of this new thing they found. Anybody raised in a heathen path, well, that's just, I'm just a heathen. That's just, I happen to be heathen.
Well, yeah, no. And so that's the thing, you know, I think we as a community kind of need to sit back and say, you know, we are not going to allow the racists, you know, to do this soft sell in our public space.
It's not just a molestation of our public opinion. It's not just what the world views us as. It's what we're allowing our young folks to think and believe because of attrition, and I'm not any longer going to be part of the problem.
Exactly. Like, I think that, like, it's not just the issue of attrition and them wearing us down. It's even for the people who are going to get caught up in this, who don't even come within a mile of it. I mean, one of the things that I really don't want to see or have become a thing in the future is for, like, heathen teenagers or, like, heathen kids or whatever coming home to their parents crying because they just got ostracized by all their friends as a bigot because they wore a hammer of thortisol. I mean,
yeah,
that's part of what we're looking at. Like, to put it very bluntly, is it's not just a question of what's inside our community. It's a question of if we don't do something about this, then the bigger world that's out there can very easily shut us off.
Well, one big victory in our favor was when the United States military allowed Milner to be placed on a headstone.
Yes.
That was a gigantic victory for us.
So you're playing.
The fact that heathen clergy are now allowed as legitimate chaplains in the military.
That's big. And it also helps that we have examples from other parts of the world, as well as getting in touch with heathens from all over the world. I mean, one thing that's actually kind of cool that, like, I'd never really had a chance to talk with before was, like, care of meeting people who are Heathens United Against Racism, getting in touch with the Latin American heathen community, which, by the way, is huge and incredibly active, like, all over the place, too. And that we have these bridges that we can reach out across, and that there's these other groups in other places that show it can be done and it has been done, says we can do it here too. There's nothing that can stop us from repeating what somebody else has done.
Well, what we're actually fighting against is an uphill battle with already established national groups that have those elements embedded in them, because the second, and I've already faced this with just a small group of people trying to put together a video with people accusing me of trying to step on someone else's toes because, well, aren't you involved with this group or this group or this group? No, I'm not. This is an independent project. Well, before you do this in the name of heathenism, don't you think you should have so-and-so's approval? What? I was unaware there was a hierarchy I had to bow to be able to do something that I felt impassioned about.
Like, that's definitely a huge part of it, and I'm glad you brought it up. Like, and it's not just that this stuff is embedded in it. It's that even in the organizations where it isn't, to put it very bluntly, a lot of the people who are running the national orgs all knew each other, all hung out, all drunk at the same parties back in, like, the 70s and 80s and 90s when they were first getting their orgs together. Like, some of them still keep in touch with each other. Like, there's certain elements of something of a good old boys network that says this is what itself is institutional heathenry and it needs to be respected. It's like, well, for a little newsflash, there was that lovely survey that was done by Dr. Carl Siegfried on his Norse mythology blog, and that survey concluded there's an absolute minimum of 17,000 heathens in the United States, probably more. In fact, most likely more than that. Of that 17,000...
Lydia has to get off because she has to go take care of, you know, life.
All right. Hi, this is Lydia. I have to go for the night, but I wanted to thank you all so much for all the really great information you all have shared. I hadn't been aware of the racism issue and heathenism, but now I am more aware, so I will try to
be a little more cautious in the future of things that I hear and see. So thank you all so much for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure, totally.
You all have a wonderful night.
You too.
Thanks, you too.
So what were you saying about the national orgs again? Sorry.
So Dr. Siegfried's census got 17,000 responses just in the U.S. The worldwide total was something like 30-some-odd thousand. But anyway, based on the numbers, estimates in some cases, hard numbers that I've got in others, if you put all of the national orgs in the United States together, if you combined all their numbers, and keep in mind that there's overlap between them, if there's quite a few people who are members of more than one org, which reduces the total number of people actually running around, which is another part of the problem, but leaving that aside, if you then put all these numbers together, you're talking maybe a little over 1,000 heathens are actually in a national org in the United States. Yeah.
Which really does not adequately represent our numbers. The pagan community I'm involved in Central Texas has been around for 33 years now, and I'm the first person in 33 years of this organization to actually cultivate a heathen sacred space. The name of the sacred space is the Folk Fae, which is the people's shrine. There's altars to the Asir and the Vanir and Ancestor Cairn, you know, and I host Sumble down there every time we host an event. And just out of the woodwork, dozens of people in this organization, and it's only about 500 people per event. We have two events a year. So, and it's not the same 500 each event. So we're looking at maybe 800 to 1,000 people each year that come to this property, and dozens of people each event. Since this sacred space was put up, have come up to me and asked me for more information because they've had dreams and they've had omens and they've had visions and calling that they really couldn't ascribe to anything other than heathenry, and they had no legitimate resources aside from just what they've happened to stumble upon on the internet. And unfortunately, what they stumble upon on the internet 50% of the time is racist in nature.
Mm-hmm. Or just plain bunk.
Well, yeah. Or just plain out Marvel dribble.
Yeah. Or something that somebody went, I'm just going to file the serial numbers off of, like, Grimm's fairy tales and some 19th century Victorian folklore and call it a day. Like, no.
Yeah, there you go. No, don't get me wrong. I thoroughly enjoyed the Marvel movies for what they were, but, you know, the recent surge in interest in heathenism because of the movies, you know, the end justifies the means to a certain degree. If people are coming to me because of genuine desire for knowledge based on watching a movie, I will give them all I have, and I will find more for them that I don't have as far as resources are concerned. And so in that light, I don't mind the movies and the comics so much because it has brought attention to a subculture, if you will, that has been struggling to gain legitimacy in the country.
Yeah.
And it's positive.
Like the Vikings TV series on the History Channel is another example of, like, just in general, this kind of stuff, like, reaching more and more into the public consciousness. I mean, granted, there's a few things from that show that make me cringe. Like, I've been to Uppsala. It's not on the top of a cliff. It's actually almost as flat as Kansas. But except for the mounds, which are absolutely gorgeous, and if you ever have an opportunity, go.
As far as the show Vikings go, yeah, they had to take a lot of artistic license to make a dramatic series out of the sagas of Ragnar Lothbrok, but I do love the fact they're actually basing it on the sagas.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a huge point in their favor, and also that, I mean, even with certain details they get wrong, there's a whole lot more that they're getting right as far as, like, depicting certain things about society, like, I mean, like, Lagertha, for example, is absolutely amazing, because it's like, yes, we have examples from the sagas of heathen women, like, straight up telling men to go stop it.
Women were allowed to participate in parliamentary procedure. They were allowed to own property. They were allowed to fight. Norse culture was,
like,
so progressive.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and like in the Vikings, where you've got Lagertha in the second season, where, you know, she becomes a Jarl in her own right. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, the biggest.
But the thing is like in a lot of medieval cultures, that wouldn't have been allowed.
Yeah.
Because a woman being a ruler in her own right, because she's a strong woman and is able to hold her rule because of that, you know, that wouldn't have been allowed. So.
Oh yeah, no. Like, it would have been. I'll put it this way. I can count on one hand how many ruling queens there are in medieval history.
Yeah. Well, the gaps that they have, they had to take artistic license because there's a lot that is unknown because the Norse really weren't known for their historians. Really, all we know about the ancestry of the Norse is what other people wrote about them. You know, whereas Ibn Fadladin said that they were dirty people because they only bathed a few times a week, the British thought that they were extremely clean people because they bathed a few times a week.
Mm-hmm. And thought they were weird because they ran around with braids in their hair and stuff too.
And the Norse of that time were the pretty boys. They wore the latest fashion.
Oh, totally. I mean, we have records of this. I mean, there's even this one great one that we do have where there's a letter from
I hate to do this, but I'm getting from the Blog Talk stream that we've only got 60 seconds left to air.
Okay.
So,
would you like to wrap up the show, darling?
I have to wrap up the show. Unfortunately, I have to wrap up the show. I want to thank you both for being here tonight. I really, really appreciate this. This has been an awesome, awesome conversation because it's gone a lot faster. Time has gotten away from me. It's gone a lot faster than I had expected. So this is Raven Firedoll, and I'm getting ready to sign out for the Tree of Life Hour for the evening. I'm wishing all of our listeners out there to be safe. I don't know, Serenity, do you have anything to say? We've got 25 seconds.
It's been an absolute pleasure. We should do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been great being on. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us, and this is the Tree of Life Hour here on Pagans Tonight.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com and let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.